Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No Hillary, no Sarah, no Barack, no Joe, no McCain, no way until later in the show. Right now, it's primary day in New York State, often a sleepy affair in non-mayoral election years. But there are an unusual number of interesting races this time around, including some you may not even know are happening right in your district, and at least one that has implications for the entire state, the primary in Lower Manhattan, where, as you just heard on the news, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver is facing a challenge for the first time in 22 years. Here is Silver on our show yesterday.
Mr. Newell and Mr. Henry are not running for speaker. They will not be the speaker. This is about representing Lower Manhattan. I'm not here to talk about what they say. I'm here to talk about my record for delivering to the residents of Lower Manhattan. They're the people that are voting tomorrow, not my colleagues in the Assembly.
So you won't even engage in discussion of your role as Speaker and how you wield that.
When somebody runs for Speaker and there's a race, we'll deal with those issues.
We'll replay clips from speakers' challengers, Paul Newell and Luke Henry, as we go. And with us now for our listener's guide to primary day is New York Times Metro reporter Jonathan Hicks. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Happy primary day.
Thank you. Same to you.
And I want to open up the phones right away for anyone with any question about any race on the ballot today, state legislature, Congress, judge, whatever, call us up right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your question to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Not so interested in electioneering. This is not really an exit poll like we do sometimes on primary day. Just trying to get the information out to everybody, because there are some interesting races, as I said, going on, and some with some real things at stake, and we're kind of providing a public service here with this segment. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Jonathan, I thought that was an amazing moment in our interview yesterday with Shelley Silver that we replayed, and I guess it must reflect his other contacts with the press. Even though he's being criticized for the way he runs the Assembly, his third of the three men in a room, closed government in Albany, even though that's the reason that the New York Times, the New York Post, and the Daily News, who are never unanimous about anything on their editorial pages, have all endorsed his opponent, Paul Newell, because they say he's part of the problem in the Albany power structure, he would not even answer a question about how he does at that part of his job.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And what he wants to do, clearly, is to sort of keep the focus aimed at, you know, his sort of bringing home the bacon job and his track record in his district. Because I suppose on some level there is some vulnerability that he must feel discussing that sort of role that he's played as one of those three men in the room in Albany. And it's certainly, you know, the thing that his opponents have pointed out as his major weakness. And they talk about his sort of devotion to, you know, backroom deals and closed-door politics and so on. And what he's trying to do is keep everything focused on his role as someone who brings home, you know, money and you know, park refurbishment and that sort of thing back in the district.
Right. He certainly brings home the bacon, as you say. Others might call it pork. Of course, it's always pork when it's in somebody else's district. It's
right.
Bacon when it's in your district. Here, Paul Newell, the candidate who did get those newspaper endorsements, responds to my question yesterday about Silver being powerful, meaning lots of money for the district if he stays in office.
Sheldon Silver does have a great deal of power. The question is, he doesn't use this power on behalf of Lower Manhattanites. When he makes decisions, when someone is as powerful as Sheldon is for as long as Sheldon Silver is for as long as he has been, the people who get into that room are other powerful people. So it's not that he's a bad guy. I think he does care about the fact that we have overcrowded schools. But what's his solution? He goes to one of his largest donors, Bruce Ratner, gives him millions and millions of dollars of subsidies and tax breaks to build a 76-story luxury tower that we need like a hole in the head, and build a school in the basement, ostensibly, that we're going to get maybe in 5 years if we're lucky.
And so on he went, and on they go. Who's actually going to vote in this election? I mean, the pundits are saying that Silver is likely to win, and probably pretty easily, and yet he gets nothing but bad press anymore.
Well, he is a name that people know. He's been around. He's been mailing to people in that district. And the other thing that helps him is that he's in a three candidate race, and it is much more difficult to get that kind of plurality if you're an opponent than it is if you're the person everybody's known for a while. And certainly, I mean, he's banking on the fact that there will be people who will know his name and will be loyal to him, at least in sufficient numbers for him to get more than the other two guys.
And he is in a three-person race, as you say, even though only one of the challengers got all those newspaper endorsements. So I asked the third guy, Luke Henry, why people should vote for you rather than the opponent if they want to see Shelley Silver out, who's galvanizing the money and the endorsements.
The votes are in the streets. The votes are in the Mitchell-Lama properties that I was just at, the NYCHA properties I was at last night, the co-ops on Grand Street, and the buildings in Battery Park City, and that's where the people are, and those are the people who go into the ballot booth tomorrow and cast their vote. So it has very little to do with whether someone has $3 million as Silver or some infinitesimally smaller amount, as both I and Paul have.
Luke Henry from yesterday's show, Jonathan Hicks, New York Times Metro reporter, my guest. What is at stake for Sheldon Silver? And an article in the Times goes to this today, and some other political writers have been saying, too, that something might be at stake for Sheldon Silver and his grip on the Assembly, even if he wins today. If he winds up winning with less than half the vote, three-way race, he could only get a plurality, under 50% potentially, and still win, that somehow this would weaken him in Albany. What's the connection?
Well, it would do that. It sort of gives the impression that this is someone who doesn't have the most firm hold in his district. And, you know, if you are seen repeatedly as being one of the powerful figures in government and in politics, and if somehow somebody chips away at that power and they've had some success at portraying you as being vulnerable, then that, you know, furthers your image as being vulnerable all the way around. A case in point, in another part of the city, you had a three-way race 2 years ago for a congressional seat in Brooklyn, where Ed Towns is the incumbent. And he got less than 50%. He got 48% of the vote. Now, he still won. He served his 2 years in Congress. But it still creates the perception of vulnerability. So here we are 2 years later, and then he has another candidate who is there saying that, you know, that I can beat this guy. And what it does is it creates the view that, you know, you're not invincible.
Let's go to another race. And in fact, it's in an overlapping district in Lower Manhattan. This is for the state Senate. So we have the Assembly and state Senate seats in play in the Democratic primary this time. And this does bleed into Brooklyn Heights as well. So it's Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn Heights. The incumbent is Martin Connor. The challenger is Daniel Squadron. And this is being seen as a big power monger proxy vote with, what is it, Mayor Bloomberg on one side and Chuck Schumer on the other side?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What is
yes.
it? What's
well,
the deal?
It is Mayor Bloomberg and Chuck Schumer on the same side. Mayor Bloomberg
on the same side.
Mayor Bloomberg and Chuck Schumer and Anthony Weiner and Scott Stringer, the Manhattan Borough President, all endorsed Mr. Squadron. Of course, you know, the incumbent Marty Connor has been in there about 30 years. He's part of really the Democratic establishment. He's also a very prominent election lawyer. In fact, he handled some of the legal machinations during Elliot Spitzer's race against Vacco some years ago. And it's really been cast certainly by the Squadron people as a race against where you have one side, the progressives, reform folk who are against, you know, the business as usual, and they've tried to depict Senator Connor in that way. Of course, Senator Connor says that, you know, he's been for all kinds of reforms all the way along, but that if you're in the Democratic minority in the Senate, there's not very much you can do about it.
Right. And so who's the power broker on the other side?
Well, Mr. Connor has
he himself.
Know, he himself. himself. He has an sort of the firmament of Democratic politics behind him in Brooklyn, with the exception of Senator Schumer and Congressman Wiener. But you have everybody else, for the most part, who's been supporting him.
All right. There are two congressional races that are interesting today. There's the Republican race to replace Vito Fisella, who, of course, is not running for re-election because of his scandal. There are two Republicans that Adolphus Towns, Democratic incumbent, is being challenged by Kevin Powell, who some people may remember as one of the guys on The Real World, the MTV show, many years ago. But also he's been a longtime community activist now in Brooklyn. And we have a call about that. So let's take it from Merrill in Clinton Hill. You're on WNYC. Hi, Merrill.
Morning. My question is, what's the likelihood of Kevin Powell winning? Because I think that everyone here in Clinton Hill is kind of sick of Ed Towns. And I think part of the reason is because of his vehement support for Hillary Clinton as a superdelegate. And I understand that the New York delegation obviously had to support her, but they didn't have to come out and say such negative things about Barack Obama, who's now our nominee. So what's the likelihood of Kevin Powell winning? Please say it's a good one.
Thank you for your call. And I do know that Kevin Powell was a very early endorser of Barack Obama.
Exactly.
Is he running on that in the district? Do you see that as an issue? Has he been making that an issue?
Merrill.
I'm asking you, Merrill, yeah.
You know what? He hasn't been making that a big issue, unfortunately. I mean, I only learned about it when I was reading the paper and happened to contact his campaign about it. But no, he's not really mentioned that.
All right. Does he have a chance, Jonathan Hicks?
Well, it's always difficult to unseat an incumbent. However, you know, Kevin Powell watched as, you know, the rest of Brooklyn did 2 years ago. In fact, for a brief time, he was a candidate in the race against Towns before he dropped out. And he watched the fact that in that three-way race, Mr. Towns got 48% of the vote, less than 50%, which means that, you know, more people voted against the congressman than voted for him. And I guess that's fueled his desire to oppose him. It's very difficult, though, to beat an incumbent. And one thing about Ed Towns is that whatever one thinks of his record, he is a very enthusiastic, vigorous campaigner. And he's been at it for a while.
All right. And in this Vito Fisella race, you have Robert Stranieri, whose name people may know. He was in the Assembly for a long, long time, has been out for a few years, versus a local physician named Jamshad Wine. Tell us about that race. I hear it's very heated.
It's very heated, and it's gotten a little bit nasty. I might add that there's also a Democratic primary in that same congressional race, where you have City Councilman Mike McMahon running in the race along with Steve Harrison, a Brooklyn lawyer, who ran against Fisella 2 years ago and did better than any of the other opponents had. But the Republican side has been particularly vicious because you have Dr. Wine, who is also the former finance chair of the Republican, no, the current finance chair of the Republican Party. It came out with an accusation that when Stranieri ran for borough president in 2001, that Stranieri tried to get him, Dr. Wine, that is, to make illegal contributions. In other words, to give a certain number of thousands of dollars to his relatives and sort of, you know, have them, you know, divide it in increments of $200 and $250, which is against the campaign finance law.
Now he tells us. He didn't tell us when it happened, allegedly.
7 years later. But they used to be very good friends, and this came out during the campaign. Stranieri, of course, has denied that any such thing ever took place. And he has instead made a lot of accusations about Dr. Wine changing his name. He hasn't changed it. He doesn't refer to himself in his campaign literature as Jamshad, but rather as Jim. And Stranieri is saying that Dr. Wine is doing that to hide from voters his Pakistani background. And Stranieri is saying that he should be proud that he's a Muslim, and he should be proud that he's Pakistani, which, of course,
that's the way of saying he's a Muslim. He's a Muslim, folks.
Precisely.
You're
Republicans,
and he's a Muslim.
Wine's accusation,
yes.
And he's been accusing Stranieri of running a fairly, ethnically divisive race.
Right. Interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that Democratic side, because there are certainly at this point.
It's been a much cleaner race, and you have the two sides really differing on issues that have been substantive. In other words, does McMahon support the continuation evacuation of troops in Iraq, and that's one of the things that has been an issue. McMahon says that he's for, you know, a timed withdrawal of troops, and Harrison has accused him of saying the opposite, that he's for more prolonged presence in Iraq. But the differences there have not been personal. They've been really on issues. And the question there is, you know, who is more at the center? And McMahon has been trying to portray himself as being much more of a centrist, which, of course, is closer to the core of the voters in the 13th Congressional District, who have sent Republicans to Congress for decades now. I mean, it's a much more moderate to conservative voting area of the city.
It's Staten Island and a little bit of Brooklyn, South Bay Ridge.
Right. Yeah, Bay Ridge and Bensonhurst.
My guest on WNYC for another few minutes, Jonathan Hicks, New York Times Metro reporter, who's giving us kind of a voter's guide to New York State primary day here. Some more interesting things on this election day that nobody will vote in, really, than you may think. I'm going to give a caller equal time here because we had the one who bashed Ed Towns. Josh in Brooklyn, you have 30 seconds to defend him.
Great. I just want to say thank you for taking my call. I just want to say Ed Towns has been wonderful in terms of me as a constituent, providing responsive constituent services, contact, and he's been fantastic directing jobs and economic growth. The other guy has no track record, no experience whatsoever. Ed Towns should be retained.
All right.
Definitely.
Do you work for
Definitely.
Towns? You don't work for Towns, do you?
No, I do not. But okay. I can tell you he's been extremely responsive.
Thank you for your call. Let's go on to an interesting state assembly race in Upper Manhattan. This is kind of up where I live in the Washington Heights Inwood area, and I have been getting flyers under my door. I mean, they're going to need 50 more recycling trucks for all the things that have been slipped under everybody's door in that neighborhood. The incumbent is Adriano Espaillat, and the challenger is City Councilman Miguel Martinez, who is a former protege of Espaillat. And they're both very popular in the district, right?
They're both very popular, and you're getting all of those mailers in there. You probably have seen a lot of sound trucks up there because Washington Heights, that area in northern Manhattan, is a real hotbed of real active political activity. It's really a very politically active area.
That's right.
And it's a great area to cover. But a lot of Manhattan Democrats are actually saddened to see this because if you watch these two, maybe 10 years ago, they were really very closely aligned. They were part of the same Democratic club, and in many ways, they were almost like family. You know, they worked on each other's campaigns. They were very, 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 very closely linked politically. And to see this rift between them, and it's been foreshadowed because they were on different sides of some district leader races a couple years ago. But it's for many Upper Manhattan residents who are politically active, it's kind of a gut-wrenching election because you see two people who a lot of the residents up there view as being very promising feuding with each other, and they just sort of wish they would find a way to get along.
And you know what's interesting to me about this, and I guess this goes on all of the city, as I get all these flyers, it's all pictures of the other politicians who've endorsed them with them, right? So I'm looking at an Espaillat flyer right now with pictures of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and David Paterson and Controller Thompson and Mayor Bloomberg, and it goes on, really, you know, Burr, President Stringer. But by the same token, the Miguel Martinez flyer has a picture of Hillary Clinton and a picture of Betsy Gottbaum, the public advocate, and Christine Quinn, the council speaker. So do people make their decisions on that? Oh, Christine Quinn backs this guy. Well, I'm going to vote. You know what I mean? And they both have Hillary Clinton, which I don't know what that means because she couldn't have endorsed both of them. So what does that mean?
I guess it means that they go to a lot of the same functions.
They get a lot of photo ops.
Yeah. But, I mean, the presumption is, I guess, that being seen with Senator Clinton or Speaker Quinn, whoever it is, adds a certain cachet or, you know, gravitas to your campaign. I suppose that's what they're trying to convey with that.
And I guess, is it misleading? Because now that I realize that Clinton is on both of these, it doesn't exactly say that they were endorsed for this race by these people whose photographs are appearing with them.
No, all it's intended to do is to convey that this is a serious person who, you know, who hangs out with serious people.
All right. Let's see. Can we get one more in here? How about the judge races? That really leaves people completely baffled. In fact, let's take a call on the judicial races from Martin in Manhattan. Hi, Martin. You're on WNYC with Jonathan Hicks from The Times.
Yes, you opened up perfectly there. I'm completely baffled about what to do when I hear these things about judges when individuals call or, leave a, recorded message or I read The Times. No one ever tells you anything about who these people are, what they think. They could end up in the Supreme Court. Who knows if they think it's okay that McKayzee misrepresented all kinds of things and wasn't responsive. Do they defend the Constitution, for instance?
Right. And with all the judicial races, and we're not going to get into them because we're out of time, but there is this kind of squishy line of judicial candidates are not supposed to campaign on the issues, so that they don't bias their decisions. They're only supposed to campaign on their qualifications.
That's all they can do. They can only say, I've done this, I've done that, I've worked in this court before. You can't really. It's a very unusual way of having to campaign. And you don't talk about you're supporting lower taxes or whatever it may be, or more education spending. It's a very fine line that you have to walk. And in some cases, judicial races, certainly we're seeing that in the Bronx, become surrogate races, no pun intended, for other political agendas of different political players. This team is supporting that person for judge, that team is supporting that person for judge, and it really is a surrogate race for which political team is the more powerful.
All right. So there is our Voter's Guide of the Air to primary day in New York State today. If you want more information, we've put three links on our webpage to a full candidates list, to the Board of Elections guide, and to the Gotham Gazette's guides to this race. So go check it out if you want to learn more before you go out and vote today in primary day in New York State. Jonathan Hicks, New York Times Metro reporter, thanks for doing this with
us.
Thank you. Now, as for next year's election, you think you'll be replacing Mayor Bloomberg if you vote in New York City, but there's a move afoot to undo, or at least amend, the term limits law in New York State, in New York City, I should say, to allow him and others to run for third terms. We will talk about it with an advocate in a minute, City Councilman Oliver Capel. Stay with us.